Three, two, one.
Ciao! With that, listeners, it's time to welcome you to our Christmas podcast.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Yeah,
cheers.
We're all together, finally.
Cheers.
Ciao.
Cheers.
This is lovely cider, Ben.
Good cider, Ben.
Why, thank you.
Nice cider, Ben.
It's made from the finest West Country apples.
Yeah.
You can taste the provenance.
Indeed.
Have you applied for the Appellation Contrôle A?
I did. I wrote to President Hollande myself.
Bristol, c'est le 13e arrondissement. Yeah, so still to come. Still to come, there's the whole of the podcast, which encompasses us, we're Linux Voice, and this is our podcast series 3, episode, is it 20 something?
22.
I'm going to go with 22.
I think 22.
Okay. I think 23.
Oh, well, in that case, it's 22 and a third, and I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Mike Saunders.
And as you've heard, we're all together in the same room after a light lunch and a few ales. We're all here to discuss Linuxy stuff. If you like the sound of this, but done in a more sober way and more professional way and more paper-based way, we produce a magazine, and that's called Linux Voice. And you can subscribe to that at shop.linuxvoice.com. If you get the digital edition, you get DRM-free PDFs. In fact, if you subscribe to the print edition, you get DRM-free PDFs.
You do about 2,400 pages, so... No, who can afford not to subscribe?
I know I can't.
If you count the EPUB pages, that's like 250,000 pages.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not the content, it's the quality of the content.
Yeah.
We need to hire somebody for marketing.
Well, yes, so that's that plugged. What now? Oh, yeah, still to come. We've got news. We've got discoveries or finds. I can't ever remember which. We've got a halfway reminder, which let's face it, is not going to be at halfway. We've got some neurons, maybe. Mike's looking quizzical.
Mm.
And we've got that thing that we do at the end, the voice of the masses.
Because whether or not we have neurons depends on whether or not we kill them with cider before we get to that point.
No one will notice the difference. We should say huge thanks to Ben for hosting us today. Yeah, it's lovely.
You're very welcome in sunny, warm Bristol.
We're at Ben's house.
Yeah. First podcast from Ben's house. We've podcasted from Andrew's place before and Graham's.
You've podcasted from two of my houses before.
Wow. Yeah.
Nick Vita's place, the pub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One time in Munich as well.
That's right. Yeah, with that's
Florian
right.
From
and Leonard and Florian.
Yeah. Of course Leonard in Berlin, yeah. We're a real international bunch.
International. Keep the pound. 24 hours to save the pound.
Oh, he lives and breathes headlines.
So yeah, she gone with news.
Hell yeah.
So, swing the podcast slightly Linuxwards. But only very slightly. So this first up in our news round this fortnight, Mozilla have killed their Firefox OS smartphone platform. Hmm. So it feels like just last year we were announcing they'd launched their smartphone platform.
And we all quite liked it as well. Yeah. It was quite good.
Yeah. I remember I saw one quote, I forget who wrote it, he said it was a really lovely interface with an empty app store. Probably sort of explained their predicament.
Well, did they have support for native apps, or were they all like Web 5 2.0?
Native is a difficult term to use on a phone that's entirely built with web technologies, because HTML5 was really native on Firefox.
Okay.
So native and web sort of blended into one seamless chunk.
Oh, yeah, because they I remember they were introducing APIs so you could access hardware more directly than in a normal browser. Mm.
Yeah, and I never owned one, but I did have a few opportunities to play with one. It felt nice for the, you know, it came in at a cheap price point, but it felt like good value for money. It didn't feel like just tat.
But, wasn't the OS used in a load of Samsung televisions?
Yeah, it's been used in quite a few places, and they haven't completely killed the platform. They're not making phones anymore, but they said they can continue to work on connected devices. So who knows? Maybe they're chasing the trends and they're going to make a phone that looks like a fox asleep and spins or something. Who knows? But
so if it was like a browser with HTML and JavaScript and CSS.
Yes.
How come there weren't any apps for it? Because doesn't the world and his mother know how to code in HTML nowadays?
Pretty much. So obviously anything that is broadly speaking a web app you could use in it to some extent, but you couldn't necessarily, they didn't package it up in a way that you could access it when you weren't online. So a Firefox app was basically a web page served from the phone. But you had to have the sort of all the gubbinses there to work properly when you're offline.
So did they give any reasons why they've cancelled it? Is it like they're losing funding ever since the deal with Google stopped a few years ago? Or
Well, they say it was just poor sales, basically.
Right. But that's going to be expected at the start. It's a market utterly dominated by Android and iOS.
Yeah, to be honest, to me, it feels like they're a little bit rudderless at the moment. Because this is always a sort of issue with a foundation that doesn't... it's not profit driven.
Mm.
So what is the motivation for creating anything for Mozilla? It's hard for them to have a vision to where they want to be when they don't have that bottom line they have to focus on.
Yeah, because like they got criticism for coming up with Rust, you know, which has been well received as a really good programming language, but a lot of people said, well, just focus on making a damn good browser.
Yeah, and it does feel like Firefox isn't as good as it used to be. To me, at least.
I think I remember reading that actually they've had an even better year this year in terms of the revenue from search.
Really?
Than they had in 2014 when the Google deal ended. Because what they've done is in every single territory like Baidu in China and Bing in the US, and I don't think anywhere in Europe actually, I think there may be Google in places and some other things, they've made independent deals with these people and it's ended up being more profitable for them. If profit's the right word to use with a charitable foundation.
Oh, instead of just one big, all singing, dancing,
yeah,
Google.
Yeah, okay. So that's good. I've always had a problem with the Mozilla Foundation and what it's actually done to promote an open web. It's always tried its hardest, but even, you know, however it was, 10 years ago when Firefox or Phoenix became Firefox and it was just, even then it felt the same in the way that Mozilla was this big behemoth with the whole kind of old Netscape Navigator suite and those big old pieces of software, and it took two kind of renegades to create Firefox, and they kind of adopted it because it became incredibly popular because we all installed it, but then they've never really understood what Firefox was or why people moved to it, to the point now that, you know, Firefox often takes over, you know, a gigabyte of my RAM even though I've only got less than 9 tabs open, and losing its core values if they ever understood them. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the criticism they've got is for trying to make Firefox look and behave increasingly like Chrome. So instead of standing out as being the best open source browser that doesn't collect all your data, they're just sort of chasing, okay, Chrome has won a lot of market share, but, you know, they should lead rather than follow.
I mean, the competition with Chrome has done some good things. It's massively increased the JavaScript performance.
Oh, yeah. Firefox.
So it's just streets ahead of where it used to be. But then, yeah, other things like, I know we talked about the Pocket
functionality
recently, but I noticed, I can't remember when I updated to a more recent Firefox, but it almost seems like they've hidden away bookmarks now to try and force you to use Pocket. And that's, on the one hand, I kind of get maybe people want Pocket integration. Okay, it's not for me, but whatever, if it's there.
Yeah.
But now I'm like searching for my bookmarks because they want me to use some proprietary service instead.
And it's also the same with their syncing engine, which still is open source, but it's actually they withdrew the support for the open source, not the open source version, but the repositories where it used to track development. So it's now it's almost impossible to install your own version of the server where you can store your passwords and your browsing history and your bookmarks, which is a really good service. Yeah, I think there's great value in Firefox going for the privacy, we respect your privacy, you know, kind of issue, the kind of privacy badger stuff that the EFF does, you know, I think Firefox should embrace that.
But when so much of their money comes from advertising, can they Can they afford to do that?
Or maybe they're the people to broker a common ground.
Yeah, you can still do advertising without tracking everyone. Yeah. I don't mind advertising. It's just being followed everywhere on the web. That's a big problem. Yeah.
Should we move on to some slightly happier news?
Yes.
Next up, our Stack Exchange is changing their licensing policy. So by default, all the code you put onto Stack Exchange from February the 1st, 2016, will be licensed under an MIT license, which is basically a do-whatever-you-want-with-it license. And any non-code, so basically words, will be licensed under CC by SA. That's by attribution and share alike. So you can do what you want with it as long as you say who gave you the stuff and as long as you share your changes.
So Stack Exchange is this question and answer website. Yes, you can ask a question about different topics. I'm sure they even have like coffee section, don't they?
They have all sorts, but by far and away the most popular, or at least as far as I'm aware, the one I use it for, yeah. I'm sure most people do, is for programming. So if you have issues with getting something to work, people, the chances are someone's already asked the question and it's already been solved. That's certainly been the case for the vast majority of problems.
It basically means non-programmers can construct programs that work without any knowledge of what it is that they're putting into their code.
Must admit.
It sounds like the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah, but it is a bit like that. You don't know how to solve the problem yourself. You find someone who's solved the problem on Stack Exchange, and it's brilliant. You copy the code into your own program. It works, damn it, and then carry on, and everything's happy.
It's a phenomenal repository. If you've never been there, if you're a programmer, I'm sure there's no programmer who hasn't been there, to be honest. But it's just got everything you ever need as a programmer.
Yeah.
There's a famous cartoon by Randall Munroe, does XKCD, about the stack sort algorithm, where if you have to construct a thing, all you do is just randomly copy bits of code from Stack Exchange into your program and run it. And someone's implemented this. There's a JavaScript stack, they call it a stack sort, where it will search Stack Exchange for code examples, copy it into your JavaScript session in your browser, and try and sort an array and keep doing it until it successfully sorts this array.
Oh, that's awesome. So, right, but yeah, because there are quite a lot of big code chunks on there, aren't there? So this means that you will not have to worry about borrowing code from there in the future.
They tend to be quite small chunks. They're sort of 10 lines or so.
Okay.
Rather than like massive programs.
What's great about this, I think, is that Stack Exchange in the blog post that accompanied this said that their idea was always that the code would be usable and people would take it and use their own programs. It's just they want to, you know, stop all ambiguity and make it definitive so that from February the code is reusable. Don't worry about it. And it kind of flies in the face of other companies, for example, like Twitter, who always kind of like to try their best to keep owning the kind of... If it is a social network, which it is really, Stack Exchange.
Yeah.
You know... Other companies see the value in people sharing their Instagram photos or whatever they happen to be, then they're all resold or they're used within their own aggregation. This is a sign that, you know, Stack Exchange, I think, is an enlightened, same with the CC by SA, that what they're trying to do is genuinely, their action is the same as their words, which is brilliant.
And I'm sure this isn't going to change the way anyone uses it. Everyone just used to copy code into their programs without...
Yeah.
And you worry about the license.
Well, as you were saying, you changed the variable names.
That's my secret. I was a little bit surprised they did not just the code, but the non-code under a free license.
Well, absolute heroes. Only the kindest-hearted, most altruistic sharing type people would use CC by SA for their words.
Indeed. What license says Linux Voice?
It's CC by SA.
Oh, what are the odds?
Wow. So, yeah, all of our old stuff, so stuff that's not been on the shelves for a wee while, you can, you know, you can reprint and modify and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
We don't want a penny from you as long as you credit us.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move back into the mobile phone sphere?
No.
No? Okay. More mobile phone news. Jolla, or Yola, however you want to pronounce it, has... did we announce it in the last podcast that it had lost its funding and losing developers, cutting half of it?
I think we did, because Maybe we did, but I can't remember.
Maybe we mentioned last fortnight, or maybe it happened just after that they're losing half their workforce.
Yeah, I think it was two podcasts ago.
It was a very emotive post by the CEO, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah.
But anyway, if you heard us say that, ignore it. It's not happening. They now have money. There's
turkey on the table for Christmas.
Yeah. They haven't said how much money they've got, and they haven't said where it's come from,
yeah.
who's given it to them, but somebody, some mysterious benefactor, has given them some amount of money.
Blue Systems.
Skynet.
This is like a pantomime, isn't it?
What?
Sorry, Ben.
Anyway, they've got money. They're keeping making phones. They've cancelled their layoffs, but a lot of staff have already resigned to go and do other things. So,
yeah, they say now they're going to continue with Sailfish OS. So it's quite interesting that here in this news section, we've got Firefox OS going down and Sailfish OS being revived and coming back to life. And you would have expected that Firefox would have been the one to survive longer, just with Mozilla behind it.
Yeah, it is possible that the two are related, that some person saw Firefox dying and thought that left more of a gap in the market.
That's true, yeah.
But they've never really been that close competitors, because Firefox went for the low end and Yola went for the higher end phones, or at least mid-range phones. So they may not be.
Yeah, the boss of Yola's was kept talking about they've gone through Death Valley, or they've gone through multiple times now, and he describes that as being useful and beneficial because they've learned from it. But I'm sure they would rather have had it all gone a lot smoother than this. But yeah, fingers crossed for them. I mean, more open source the better, more choice the better, but you wonder how long it can go on for.
Yeah.
I'd prefer them to have walked through the valley of the shadow of death and feared no evil. That would have been better. More better, as Effie would say.
We're not too far away from Effie here, actually. Yeah.
Maybe they didn't fear evil before they were rescued. Yeah. We don't know whether or not they were feared.
No, that's true.
They feared the evil.
You missed a nice, listeners, you missed a nice theological discussion before we started. Do they know it's Christmas time, Ben?
I have many opinions on that subject, which I won't go into now. Let's move away from phones, back into the realm of...
I said we should never have gone to the phones in the first place. You ignored me.
Back to Ethiopia. Back to the Document Foundation. Onwards to the Document Foundation.
That Ethiopian curry we had at the beer festival was absolutely of the gods. That was fantastic. The Ethiopian curry.
What? What is a word for an Ethiopian curry? I was making it up.
Ethiopian jokes. Awesome.
I always like to make puns in Amharic.
What we were talking about, curry, that's right. what I was interested in anyway. Let's keep talking about curry.
So the Linux Foundation has released some new curry.
The Linux Foundation, together with the Document Foundation, have tied together LibreOffice and OwnCloud. Did I say the Document Foundation together with the Document Foundation?
No. Isn't it collabora with the Document Foundation? The Linux Foundation isn't involved,
are they? OwnCloud and the Document Foundation.
OwnCloud.
The side is getting to me now. OwnCloud and the Document Foundation have tied together LibreOffice and LibreOffice Online. Some stuff's happened. Should we move away?
But is it good stuff?
It's good stuff.
Oh, that's good. That's
you
the
can
main
now
thing.
Edit LibreOffice stuff. So you've always, well, not. Since release of version 8, I think, of OwnCloud, you've been able to edit LibreOffice writer documentation to ODE.
WebODF, wasn't it?
Yeah, WebODF.
Yeah.
But now they've sort of souped that up with LibreOffice Online, and you can edit spreadsheets and presentations.
Do you remember when we went to speak to Michael Meeks? Because I think it's Collabora who've done all the work, or one of their clients has hired Collabora to do all of this. And it was part of them taking LibreOffice away from X11 and creating an independent rendering system that I think they've implemented probably in JavaScript or something, some way that they can render effectively exactly the same LibreOffice that we use on our desktops, but within a kind of within a web framework, and this is like the first fruits of that actually happening. And I tried the virtual machine that came with that press release, and it's really, really good.
It uses a tile-based system.
That's right.
It?
Yeah,
just, say just
it's like on Canvas or something.
Yeah,
something pretty straightforward.
So the idea is it just updates little parts of the screen, but instead of sending a whole image.
It's not Google Docs. It's like a fully fledged LibreOffice running in a browser, and so it means that it's a really good idea because it, as an office, lots of people are using Google Docs now. Or the MS equivalent, but what you get is an open source solution and a solution that is a fully fledged Office suite, so a proper, you know, fully functional Word rather than Word equivalent rather than the dumbed down HTML version.
And then having it tied into document storage and collaboration, this is where they say Microsoft's got it quite strong with Office 365. You know, LibreOffice is a fantastic Office suite, but you know, it's just a standalone Office suite. If you can bring it together with OwnCloud and maybe one day with a mail client, you know, you get all this collaboration, and so you don't end up just emailing files around.
The collaboration isn't there yet, I think, but that's definitely on the plan to do it.
Collaboration was there with the writer documents previously.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't know if that's gone when they added new power.
And it was part of OwnCloud. But it did work really well, and it was quick. And any of us running OwnCloud instances can install it or when they release the code. It's really, I think it is significant. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I used it as well, and I was really surprised at how well it worked. Because, I mean, I actually only used their sample documents, so they may have been carefully selected. But they were, had all sorts of text frames and images and fancy fonts and whatnot, and you could move it all around and do.
But they'd not use apostrophes because they can't handle apostrophes.
Right, should we move on to our final item of news this fortnight? And that is Swift, the
Apple's programming language.
So the European Swift or the African Swift?
Unladen.
Green, no red.
Why did we have to hide it before this? Swift, the programming language created by Apple for their things, their shiny devices that start with an I. That now supports devices that start with the U, namely Ubuntu things.
Computers. So this is like, I think this is the Linux version, effectively, of Swift.
Yes, it is. So you can now, you can code in Swift and it will run. They haven't ported over like all their sort of APIs, their graphical whatnot, doohickeys and spinning beach balls.
No.
But you can make things run. But at least you can scroll the right way around without getting horribly confused.
I have reverse scrolling even on my Linux.
Dear, it breaks my tiny mind. It's always when I open the document, I'm at the start and I'm scrolling down and it just doesn't move. So I assume that just completely scrolling is broken.
I guess this kind of falls into the .NET mono category, that you don't want to promote something that's, you know, where the archdeacon of Swift is Apple. But I think it's good. I thought Mono was good as well. I think it's great for people who want to learn Swift and understand. It's become huge. It has become quite a new programming paradigm. I can see that in the way that the internet responds to Swift and the way everybody gets excited by its new way of doing things, whatever they are. And it means that Linux people can train themselves in Swift and help themselves get jobs and careers, even though I don't want to promote them getting jobs and careers away from open source software. I think it providing more options and is a good thing.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be more cross-platform stuff as well.
Yeah, that's true. There's nothing to stop them building GTK APIs for Swift. Mm. I mean, if it is as good as everybody says it is, and I haven't actually used it myself.
Nor have I, but I have had a look at it, if that counts. And it does look a lot better than Objective-C or whatever Apple was using before, which was...
I mean, maybe we should give a pitch to actually Paul Hudson, who we used to work with, has actually got a really great Swift programming portal. I can't quite remember the name of it, but I know it's, you know, Paul has always been very good at teaching people how to program, and he's done this almost in just to teach people programming, and he believes that Swift is good, so it's worth looking to have a go.
I did actually do some programming in Swift, but all my code was just copied and pasted from Stack Exchange, so I don't actually know how it worked.
Actually, that's all you need to get a job programming Swift.
10 years experience.
Well, the people on Stack Exchange whose code I copied probably had 10 years between them. So, Control C and Control V work.
Oh, that was another thing. Did you see that grub exploit? It was like press backspace 26 times and you got dropped down to a command prompt. That was another story I meant to mention. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it's quite the vulnerability.
So even if somebody's like really locked down, so you can't tamper with it, you can get up in a command line, boot into single user mode.
Yeah, exactly. From Grub, yeah. Even though you've locked down Grub in every other way.
Backspace 26 times.
I tried it and I couldn't get it to work, so I can't comment on it further, but lots of people took it seriously, so it must have been somewhere in some distributions.
And that's the news this fortnight.
Good news, Ben.
Good news.
Good cider, Ben.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top cider skills.
Top cider.
Cider is strong.
The secret, dear listeners, to making good cider, if you've only got access to regular apple juice, not cider apples, is to add tannins. I add grape tannin to my cider, which makes it go dry properly rather than watery like regular apple juice will do.
How do you get? Where do you get the tannins? I mean, do they come in like grape juice carton or something like that?
No, they come as powder form in a little jar. Oh. You just add a teaspoon per gallon. Maybe not a heap, a flat teaspoon per gallon. For a moderately dry cider.
Right, it's now time for finds of the fortnight.
I had some finds given to me by one of our colleagues over on Linux Welt, a German Linux magazine.
Does it say Achtung schnell Kartoffelkopf?
The guy said he actually has used some of our finds in his writing for Linux Welt magazine, actually in their Fosspix-like cool. section, so... I think it was rsync partial. Did you come up with once as a find?
Partial and bandwidth limit.
Right, yeah. He said he heard that from you and put it in his magazine. So you are...
I shall ask for my commission.
and this is David Volsky, by the way. And what else did he...
No, don't credit him. He didn't credit me.
Well, if he's listening to this, then now he knows what to do.
Does he listen to the podcast?
Yeah, yeah. That's why he knows Ben's...
Just refer to him as the fine thieving German.
This is going to take so long to edit.
It's all fine by me. Yeah. He pointed to a cursors-based network manager called Ceni, or Kenny, C-E-N-I, which he said fixed a lot of his network problems.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I've never used it myself, but... If anybody's having network Wi-Fi problems, it's worth looking at. And he also pointed to, you might know this, Graham, the KDE, how you can, in the KDE file browser or web browser, it's got a great way of showing manual pages.
I guess you type /://
Yeah, dots. Yeah, and apparently it's really good, layout and searching.
I just type that into Google and it works.
Yeah, yeah. There's loads of things like that in KDE. I can't remember, but you can do gg:// for Google, wp:// for Wikipedia, gi for Google Images, dict for a dictionary search.
Mm. Are you getting it confused with DuckDuckGo?
It sounds similar.
It's exclamation mark G, isn't it, in DuckDuckGo? But yeah, similar functionality.
Mm.
Ah, cool.
Anyway, those are my finds, so thanks, David.
I did, actually, and we're recording this on Saturday the 19th, and it's the evening, so I did ask the IRC channel, saying, apologising for the crazy hour, and Devilment responded. So we have one find. My find from a few days ago was conemu for Windows. Okay, not a Linux find. So it was conemu or conemu. It gives you a window with tabbed consoles. You can put PuTTY into it, launch command.exe, and have Cygwin terminals. So that's useful if you're having to use a Unix-like environment from Windows, which lots of people do, and then go back to Linux. And via the Linux Luddites podcast, who mentioned MyCLI, there's PGCLI. Both MyCLI and PGCLI provide command line subcomplete for SQL statements and the syntax used by each database. That is cool because I can never remember SQL syntax.
And I just automatically hit tab whenever I'm doing anything and can't be bothered to type the rest of the word.
I use Stack Exchange for SQL commands.
We need to make something so you can hit tab and it will go to Stack Exchange.
Yeah. Just fill in the most common answer.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. I must get on that. So they're the finds from IRC and Linux Luddites. We should give a shout out to Joe. It's Joe Ressington.
And Paddy.
And Paddy.
And Jesse.
Shall I go for my finds? My first find, you're going to have to indulge me a little bit with this one because it is a bit weird.
Is it a synthesizer?
No, it's not. It's something called ASMR, which apparently is this weird YouTube subculture where people watch videos that make either their scalp or parts of their brain tingle and with thoughts of positivity and feel really good about themselves. And I have to say, I used to experience this feeling when I was a child. There's this specific feeling that goes through your head that feels like, and science hasn't proven this exists or doesn't exist. Although the reason why I found it this week is because there's been an article on the BBC about it. But I have genuinely experienced this, especially as a child. There's a weird set of circumstances that leads to basically a very pleasant sensation that feels like it's running through your brain. And I had no clue that this has become a massive subculture to the extent that there are millions of views on YouTube of people watching videos that stimulate this response in your brain or scalp or muscles or whatever it happens to be.
So when you say, is this like just weird moving things or is it like feel-good films or...?
No, it's the closest thing to it is the feeling of getting a kind of a goose pimply shiver if you listen to a good piece of music or something like that.
Well, what are the videos like?
The weird thing is that there are all kinds of stimuli, and this is where it gets to be a little bit creepy and has a little bit of a fetish. The best way I can describe it are the videos are the opposite of watching Christopher Hitchens speak. It's what they are is it's there's a load of role play, for example. Some people role play selling somebody's shoes or everything has a tactile quality where they'll slowly whisper.
Yeah.
And they crinkle paper.
Just to interrupt there, Graham, but yeah, there's a whole Reddit subculture for it as well with 111,000 subscribers on the ASMR subreddit. I came across this a while back as well. And
what's the top ever post on the subreddit? So what I look at?
I'm just saying one of them here is like fast tapping on a large log candle. So this is a video of nails tapping on a candle, and that apparently triggers these. So how do you use Reddit, Ben? Just click top.
Clip top. And it's all at all time. And the top one's weird.
They're all weird.
Yeah.
Now, so my find is that I watched a couple of these weird things, and it worked.
Yeah. Are you happy now?
I have to say.
Wow. I remember that.
Happy Graham.
It started to have the same effect on my brain or whatever it is that... I'm telling you, it's the truth. It isn't a cider. I wrote this down before coming to Ben's. This genuinely happens to me. I genuinely get this feeling from watching somebody opening a cigar packet or doing whatever it is. And it has this really weird effect. What it is something... The closest thing I can see is actually in when you stroke a cat and the cat responds and purrs. That's the closest thing I can say approximates the feeling that I feel. And also, I think the stimuli, because the way the videos are constructed are that they have a direct, they're looking at you, they're whispering at you. There's something that triggers something in your brain where you feel some kind of sense of security, even though it's pretend and it's YouTube and somebody's dressed up as a dentist. So, yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm glad somebody's heard of it because I'm really coming out now and saying that actually it works and I genuinely feel it.
And can you imagine this with a VR headset as well?
It's going to be amazing. Level. I'm all over it. I'm thinking of making my own videos.
What would you do in the video?
Well, maybe synthesizer AMSR.
Who would have thunk it?
That's going to link to my second find.
Just FYI, you talked about stroking a cat. He's, over at my house. Our cat, if he's sitting on the windowsill looking out and you stroke him and he sees a cat outside, he'll bite you.
to show the other cat that he's hard.
he seems to get a bit confused and think that it's the other cat touching him or something. He's not a smart cat.
The cat is a bit of a dumbass, I'm afraid, yeah.
So just know that.
Okay.
If he's looking in, you're fine. But if he's looking out... And there's a cat out there.
I just think he wants to look hard to the neighbourhood crew. He doesn't want to look like a wolf sitting there. Oh, I've got my owners looking after me.
Great. And what's this discovery then?
So this is an audio plugin, suite of audio plugins. They're genuinely useful, even if you don't do anything proper with audio or play around with synthesizers. If you record a podcast, for example, one of the most essential tools you need is a noise gate. And that is something that basically cuts off the input when the level falls below a certain threshold. You need it with a podcast because you're often recording it with a noisy computer in the background or in a noisy environment. I mean, it makes the quality of the recording much better. And I have hunted high and low for a noise gate. There wasn't a decent noise gate until I discovered EQ10QM version 2, which is only just released this week, which is a bundle of three plugins, basically. A brilliant noise gate is one of them, and it's the best I've seen. There is nothing like it in open source, and really there's nothing like it in the commercial noise gates I've used either. Really good if you use electric guitar as well, because guitar effects units create an awful lot of background noise, so you usually use a noise gate with those.
When you say a plugin, what's it a plugin to?
So if when you work with audio, even in Audacity, you apply effects to the audio. So if you wanted reverb or you wanted a compression to boost up the levels of our voices, for example, you use a plugin. It's just like a filter in the GIMP. It's exactly like a filter in the GIMP.
I mean, what software will it work with? Is it Audacity?
It will work. So the standard plugin format for open source and Linux is called LV2, and everything will use it. Audacity uses it. Arda uses it.
Okay.
QTractor uses it. And it's called a plugin because they're not standalone applications. You install them. You don't appear anywhere, but then they'll appear in Audacity's menus or in Arda's menus. And then the audio goes through the plugin and then back to your audio software so you can record the effects of whatever it's done. So if we recorded this podcast in Audacity, ran it through the noise gate plugin, what would happen is that any moments of silence would be completely silent as the noise gate drops below a threshold and makes it silent. And there are also two other brilliant plugins. One is a 10 level graphic equalizer, which sounds really great. It's got a spectrogram and allows you to take out like a 50 hertz hum, for example, from the electricity, or remove the bass and the high end and boost the middle end. You need it if you do anything with music. It's really good, one of the best I've heard, and a compressor. So this plugin suite is just like a podcaster's dream toolkit, really, if you fancy getting into podcasting or any kind of audio stuff. So kind of geeky, but audio is essential. It's like bread and butter effects. And it's brand new and really great graphics and really great performance. I really like it. I still prefer AMSR, but I'm not going to convince you.
We'll give it a try.
Yeah. If you've never experienced it, from what I read about it, even you know, everyone kind of experienced it as children. It's some kind of attention weird stuff, I have to say.
You can put some links in the some video links.
I'm not sure I should because it gets very weird. neurologists have started to research it because it's become so prevalent, especially online, with these, so many millions of people watching these videos on YouTube. And I'm a pragmatic utilitarian person. I wouldn't make this up. I feel it. I really feel it. It's a genuine feeling.
Do you have to be in a very quiet environment to watch that? I mean, I guess you can't watch these with kids running around. Or
probably, but it does something. It's triggering some response in your brain. I mean, there's parts of your brain are older than other parts in terms of evolution, and you know, like you see things even when you're not looking directly at them, and it could have that kind of effect. It could be something to do with that, and it's the way primates kind of groom one another, and they don't always do it to get rid of their nits. They're doing it really to form some kind of social cohesion. So, as a crude guess, I'm guessing this is part of some kind of social bringing social units together through grooming and through kind of mutual petting or something like that.
And on YouTube,
Well, no, they're responding to some kind of effect that they feel, but in terms of the whether it's a brain response, a neurological response, or whether it's a physical response, I'm guessing that would be the cause of it.
Shall I
bring us back down to earth?
Yeah, jump in with a technical find. If you visit linuxvoice.com now, you may notice that it's under HTTPS. That's a secure version of the protocol rather than regular HTTP.
How did you find that out?
There's that and our sort of collaboration server. I switched them both over to HTTPS recently, and one of them we've used Let's Encrypt, the Mozilla Linux Foundation, or those have come together to create this. I think it's supposed to be a really easy way of setting up secure web servers, or at least certificates for them. The other one uses Cloudflare, which works in a slightly different way. I discovered Let's Encrypt, and I also discovered that it doesn't work with the version of Python that comes in CentOS 6 in Red Hat 6, which is annoying.
There's going to be a lot of deployments with CentOS 6 and Red Hat 6.
Yeah, it says it can work if you use the debug flag, but you don't really want to be using experimental stuff on a production web server. Mm. The other thing that's quite annoying about it is that you have to stop there is a way around this, but the default way is to stop the web server, which again is slightly annoying on a production web server, even if it does only take doesn't take long to run. But it seems to be built around, certainly with Debian as a sort of the environment in mind, because that way they've got all the auto switches and it just runs and you leave it, and it's slightly more awkward on CentOS, but it's still really easy, to be fair, compared to any other method of buying certificates that I've used. And it makes it really easy to set up secure websites. And the other thing I've discovered is that SCL in CentOS, which allows you to use Python 2.7 without installing it as the default, or even installing it into the main path. So if you look on our web server now, Python 2.7 isn't installed, but you can use it through the command called SCL to create a new shell environment with Python 2.7 as the default Python.
SEL.
SCL, I think it was called, Software Collections Library.
Oh, okay.
Which is quite handy. And my other discovery this fortnight is a Powerball, which sounds dramatic. But as podcast listeners will know, I get some pains in my hands when using a computer. And this, it's really hard to explain. It's a ball with a gyroscope inside that you sort of spin with your hand. And as you spin it, the gyroscope speeds up, so it becomes more difficult to spin, more pushback against your hands. And it sort of becomes this writhing, wriggling ball that you're trying to hold onto and spin it against an ever-increasing force. And it sort of increases not just the grip strength in your hand, but all the sort of support muscles for your wrist and your arm and your fingers. So it's really good for building up the strength, which can be, and the decreasing strength in your fingers caused by using a keyboard can be one of the triggers for RSI and pains in your hands. And I found it phenomenally effective at relieving the pain in my hands.
Oh, it's actually worked.
It's worked really, and like from the first use as well. It's not even like it's something that's gradually got better. The first time, it's almost therapeutic. So if I'm getting some pain, I'll start using it. And I don't know what it does to my muscles, but it ends up with this sort of slightly pulsating force on your hand. It's really soft. There's no sort of jerkiness to it like there often is with exercise. It's very smooth and it just gradually pulsates your muscles. And it just, I can't explain quite what it does, but it just makes the pain stop really quickly. And it's I've been really impressed with it.
Yeah, you can pick these things up for like 10 or 15 quid, can't you? And
yeah, this was the 15 quid version. They come a bit cheaper, but I wanted to know how fast I was going, because I wanted to be the best.
Quantify everything.
Yes.
Got a revs per minute counter on the top of it. But yeah, I've used one as well before. And yeah, you just, partly feels like, well, you're just gripping something strongly, but that isn't going to help your hands alone. It must be, like you say, the sort of vibration and the pulsing and the...
Yeah, and I think it's also important that it exercises all the muscles in your forearm and wrist, not just so, because you can get grip strength squeezers, but they isolate one muscle and just strengthen, whereas this does a huge amount for your wrist. Obviously, it's not for everyone. Graham tried and managed to tangle it all up. But I found it's worked really well.
It's a good find.
Is it my turn?
It is.
My discovery, I've got two. So the first one is that all mental health care provision in Devon is now provided not by the NHS, but by Virgin Healthcare.
So the same Virgin that opened a big music store in Oxford Street.
Yeah. The same Virgin that runs those trains that smell of poo.
And flies those aeroplanes that fill up the air.
Yeah. So let's just ponder that for a moment of quiet reflection while we think about, while we think about Richard Branson with his private island.
It's Christmas.
His stupid face. And my next discovery is I went to see the new Star Wars film, so I know all about the all the Ewoks together and Darth Vader. And Jar Jar Binks was actually an evil Sith orchestrating the whole thing all along.
And that's the big Reddit theory.
Yeah, it is. Jar Jar Binks is all the way through the latest film. He's the best thing in it. And it's rubbish, so don't go and see it. Those are my discovery. Oh, I got another discovery, actually. Is Elite Dangerous out on Linux?
No.
Not yet.
In that case, I don't have any more discoveries.
Yeah, it should be.
Maybe it's written in Swift, so they're only just porting it now.
David Braben did say he'd consider it. So there's an OS X version, so you'd assume it wouldn't be that difficult, but yeah. And they were our finds.
So,
I mind if I borrow the bottle opener?
Yeah.
So, a fresh round of cider has been brought out. We've discovered things. We've heard the news. Mm. We're approximately two-thirds of the way through the podcast. So, it must be time for a halfway reminder. Still to come, we may or may not have neurons to vocalise. And we've got the discoveries of the voice of the masses.
One day these words will come together and make sense.
Curse the background noises.
Curse this metal body.
This is good. This is how it should be.
Cheers, Ben.
Cheers, Ben.
Happy Christmas.
Cheers, listeners.
Cheers, everybody.
Thank you for getting us this far.
Clink and all of that. Thank you for your feedback and finds. And
thanks for buying the magazine. And thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Except the German that steals my finds.
Yeah, you'll have to settle that in an international arbitration court.
And look, the condensation on my my placemat has made the shape of a smiley faced
you've got
Michael Ebis. Oh, Jesus. It's Jesus. Yeah. Not the baby Jesus, though, because it's got a beard.
Michael Ebis could be Jesus. I've often thought the Glastonbury tour.
Did those feet in ancient times and all that.
You see recent research has thrown all that into huge doubt.
No! I thought it was true.
Thrown into huge doubt that Jesus came to England.
Came to Glastonbury.
Joseph of Arimathea or whoever it is buried at Glastonbury Abbey.
It's Arthur. Yeah.
Arthur, King of the Britons.
But we've known that this was nonsense for ages. Who are these scientists getting their lucrative research grants to find stuff out that we already know?
They're obviously funded by student grants.
So, Andrew's looking at me.
Oh, like, yeah, Mike, do we have any neurons?
Begging for some neurons.
Please,
to be
give
vocalized.
Me your neuron me till I pass out.
No, it's okay, because although we don't have any neurons this episode, Ben is looking at me and he looks really angry. Which may be the cider again.
How can you tell? That's just Ben's normal face.
So, Ben, you look angry. Are you angry? Tell everyone.
I'm incensed.
Is this podcast going to make any sense to anyone except for
Mike? Everybody else should drink cider whilst listening.
Yeah. This is about the Raspberry Pi, actually. Right, and there are many, many good things about the Raspberry Pi and the Raspberry Pi Foundation. It's a great little device for a huge range of things, and they've done great stuff in education, sort of get kids into computing, and that's all fantastic. But there's one thing they are spectacularly bad at, and that is naming devices. And I don't mean the Raspberry Pi name. That's okay, you can take it or leave it. Some people like it, some people don't. I don't have a strong feeling on it, but it's the actual devices within that that sort of anger me a little bit. Because first of all, we had the Raspberry Pi. It was a device. It was a Raspberry Pi. That was what there was, and that's fine. And then they came out with the Raspberry Pi version 2, which is the same, except they had some GPI changes. And I'm sorry, that's Raspberry Pi revision 2. The Raspberry Pi version 2 is a completely different device.
You've been rehearsing this.
Then there was the B+, which was the same as which had the same sort of chip on it. Except there were more Raspberry Pi, more GPIOs than the B. So then you could say, okay, you got the Raspberry Pi B with a few GPIOs, the Raspberry Pi B plus with a few more. And then that's completely blown out of the water by the Raspberry Pi 2B, which is the same as the B plus, not the B, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
No, you've lost me, actually.
Yeah, I thought I had it.
But, no.
Yeah.
So now you've got the situation where you've got the B plus, which has more GPIOs than the Model B, unless the Model B is Raspberry Pi 2. And the Raspberry Pi 2B is... I've lost myself now. I'm completely confused. But anyway, the B and the B plus makes no sense whatsoever now. But anyway, you could get your head around that if you had a list of stuff and then you remembered it. And then they came out with the 0, which is a new GPIO library. Oh no, sorry, the Zero is the new board without GPIOs. Oh no, it's both released at the same time. So keep producing great devices, Raspberry Pi Foundation, but clear up the naming situation, please.
I would suggest Raspberry Pi Foundation, please do like Microsoft with the Xbox and come out with the Raspberry Pi 1, just to make Ben even more angry.
Ah.
No, I agree with you. I have always found it a bit confusing. I've got a couple of Pis myself, and then whenever you want to check the specs, and I'm looking at B plus.
Well, you can't tell them apart. I mean, I've got almost one of every generation, and of course you can tell them apart, but you can't easily tell them apart. There's not even like a big A, B, B plus, and they don't label the GPIO pins, which is frustrating because that's the biggest problem. Especially when, you know, the difference between the B or B plus and whatever version 2 was exactly the same configuration to look at and different in application. Yeah, I think it's a really good point.
I don't understand what's wrong with calling your first device 1 and then going through until you run out of numbers.
Do you like the versioning system of, I think it's Xterm and Less, they just keep adding numbers. I think Less is on version 378 now. They don't have points, you know, and revisions. They just keep adding a number.
I don't want to be the devil's advocate, but they did just think that they'd only make 10,000 of those Raspberry Pis.
That's true.
And they were making Model A and B to be the BBC Model A and B equivalents.
That's fair enough. But they knew exactly how many they were going to sell when they introduced the GPI 0 and the Raspberry Pi 0. And by the time the version 2 with the B, revision 2, they knew how many they were going to sell. Damn them all.
Thanks for your substitute neuron there, Ben.
Right.
And if you want to learn Python with Raspberry Pi, there's an awesome book called Learning Python with Raspberry Pi.
Yes. It works with some models of the Raspberry Pi. I can't tell you which ones.
That book by Ben Everard, available at all good bookshops.
Isn't it Ben Everard and somebody else?
Yeah, Alex Bradbury.
There we go.
Ben Everard and Alex Bradbury.
Of the Raspberry Pi Foundation.
Good.
So we now, as in the ever successful Star Wars franchise, which who's at episode 7 I just went to see.
What's the deal?
I took my gold bikini along, fitted right in.
Is that actually episode 7? So it's actually the right number now?
I don't know. And I disapprove, really, of all this numbering revisionist nonsense, having episode 1 4 episodes in. I don't like it.
It's a bit like what the Raspberry Pi Foundation
does. Seamless.
Model 2.
But as with that, we move from the anger, the frustration and fear felt by Ben, to the which leads to the dark side, clearly, to the harmonious love and joy that is our voice of the masses. So we thought, what with the coming of St. Nicholas, whenever that may be, whether you're going by the, you know, Western Orthodox or Ethiopian churches, that either way, 2005 is going to come to a close fairly soon. So
2005
will be closing soon. Get your answers on a postcard. 2015 will be ending soon. So to end on a happy note of joy and love, we thought we'd ask, what was your Linux highlight in 2015? Ben, what made you happiest? I know you're still full of rage. I can see the vein throbbing, the artery throbbing in your temple there, because veins don't throb.
This is something I really should have thought about before the podcast.
Me too. I'm glad you did that to me.
Still so much rage cursing through Ben's veins and arteries there.
So many good stories, it's difficult to know which one to choose.
Right,
that was my answer. Don't steal that.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I wonder why Mike picked up his laptop.
I'll tell you what, it would have to be the best of the Beatles. So, Brocker says, the best thing in 2015 was the kernel update that brought support for the gyroscope in my hybrid laptop. Is pretty high on the list simply because it was unexpected and so all the more joyful. Also, 2015 was the year that I realised Wine had become so amazingly good that I g-parted ways with the last Windows install in the house. That is happy news. And also, on a slightly less personal note, the news that the city in which he lives, Aarhus in Denmark, intends to move to open source software and open standards. That is good news.
That is good news, yeah. There have been many, many announcements this year of different governments and local authorities and companies moving to Linux or open document standards, at least, and LibreOffice and stuff. So, yeah, those are good things.
In the UK, too, they said that, you know, the ODF's formats are going to be the
.gov. Yeah. .co.
I feel like that's the sort of thing we say every year.
Is this the year of government adoption on the desktop? Serge Strobant says, exactly the same thing happened to me. Now, I realise that without the context, that doesn't make any sense. So let's just scroll up one to Frank, who says, my personal highlight was finally becoming competent, not expert, but competent, and no longer intimidated, in Vim, thanks in large part to Linux Voices tutorial and video.
Ooh, who made that video? Excellent.
I don't know, was it? Was it you?
It was Susie Denmark. I mean, Mike Saunders.
Right. Yeah. And then Serge Strobant, who I flicked down to because his avatar is Marlon Brando as Colonel Kurtz at the end of Apocalypse Now, says exactly the same happened to me. Mike, thank you, Mike and Linux Voice, for this tremendous gift.
You're welcome. I only made that video because I love Vim so much as well.
Stephen Wheeler, the highlight for me was taking possession of and falling in love with my Yola smartphone. Mm-hmm. A low point was finding out last month that Yola have applied for debt restructuring, the Finnish version of protection from creditor. Oh. Well, Stephen, we've got panda. Good news for you. Yeah. He's a happy panda. Niels K. I just switched last year back to Linux after 10 years of OS X. In the beginning of this year, I learned to use Tiling Dynamic Window Managers and i3. Mm. That totally changed my workflow, and always when I have a look at stacking, composing window managers again, it feels really cumbersome to work with them. Mike, you've got a lot of love for these Tiling window managers and i3, haven't you?
I do, yeah. I mean, I spend quite a lot of time working on a laptop, but when you've got quite a bit of screen space, they're just fantastic. You just, everything fits together neatly. You don't have to think about dragging windows around. Going to something like OS X, you know, people say, oh, OS X is a great example of user-friendliness. It's actually a really, really poor windowing system. And yeah, Tiling window managers where you can keep your hand on the keyboard, you don't have to keep sliding around with the mouse. They're fantastic.
When I used to use OS X, I always used to get confused as to whether an application had crashed or if I'd just lost the window. It's like, it was open a minute ago. Where is this?
Yeah, yeah. And the different workspaces and alt tabbing. Let's not even get into that, but it is a bit of a mess.
Let's move away from the dark side, chaps.
So positive.
Yeah.
Are you watching these ASMR videos as well?
Don't be like Jar Jar Binks in the latest episode, Series 7 of Star Wars The Force Awakens. Be like that other character who's a goodie.
But the problem is I've never seen Star Wars, Andrew, so...
Mike has never seen Star Wars.
On this podcast, I don't think I've ever seen a Star Wars film, which is quite bad for a geek, but...
Mike's never seen Star Wars, and Ben prefers The Expendables 2 to Breaking Bad.
I just don't like Breaking Bad.
I don't know what Expendables is, but Breaking Bad's pretty good.
Sylvester Stallone is in that, isn't
it? Yeah, Dolph Lundgren. Yeah.
Basically, every actor you'd want to be in a film's in.
Wesley Snipes only pops up in the third one. Yeah. He's my favourite. Mr. MJB says, Arda 4.x series, fantastic.
Yeah, Andrew's looking at me. It is brilliant.
I look at Graham for anything KDE or audio related.
Arda. Sometimes just gaze into his eyes.
Yeah, it's recording this podcast as we speak. I think he's done amazing work on it. It needs funding. It's constantly... I've recently tried to download... we should not do the negativity. But he's pretty much blocked off any binary downloads for Windows or OS X unless you pay some money. Which I don't really agree with, but I understand that he's got to try all kinds of avenues for funding. But Arda is a great piece of software.
Now, we've spoken a lot about phones. Neil McPhail says, for me, it's been the liberation of... This is the best Linux moment of 2015. For me, it's been the liberation of dumping my Google/Linux phone for a GNU/Linux phone running Ubuntu. It has a lot of rough edges, but it treats me as a user, developer, or administrator rather than a customer or commodity. I felt the same way when I dumped Windows for SUSE all those years ago. Wow, that's a big statement, isn't it?
Oh. I keep meaning to put Ubuntu on my phone.
Can you install Ubuntu on your phone? Do you know if it's supported?
Andrew can on his Nexus, yeah.
Oh, he's got the Nexus 5 with a nice shiny screen.
Customised screen.
Customised via pavement
screen. Hand artisan smashed screen organically in Shoreditch or Hoxton or wherever it is.
I found the same thing. I mean, I'm using CyanogenMod now, but I like the fact that open source has enabled me to switch to a different OS on my phone and take control of my own data and privacy and apps and stuff. Albeit with the advantages of Android.
I know, my personal highlight has been the chip $9 computer and then the Raspberry Pi $5 computer. I mean, having that competition in these... I was at the pub with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he doesn't know much about Linux, and he's a student, and he doesn't have much money. And I said to him, now you can buy a computer for the price of this beer that we're drinking. And it just blew his mind. And fully usable computers running Linux. For the cost of a beer, I mean, it's amazing. It's democratic.
And supremely hackable. I mean, that's the great thing as well about both of those and the Pi Zero. You know, just solder on some pads for £4. It's okay. That is a real highlight of mine as well.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Francesco Turco says, this year I switched for the first time to a 100% free GNU Linux distribution, Parabola. I also finally started to learn a serious text editor, Emacs.
Oh!
Text editor wars. It all goes over my head.
Emacs isn't a text editor, it's an operating system.
Right, and would you prefer to use Vim?
Well, yeah, Vim is a text editor,
Who cares?
Seriously. What if you use Emacs in evil mode?
Then you probably need to go to one of these Virgin mental clinics.
In Bermuda.
Oh, dear.
Andrew's trying to keep it positive.
Love,
peace, happiness. We need your cat, Ben. Bring
I'm trying
cat
not, to use,
I'll be happy.
Not to use mental illness as a shortcut for a slur.
I know, that's
not... My cat is evil personified. Okay. He won't make us happy. He'll sit in the corner and scowl and scratch at people. My personal highlight is not that Linux related, but sort of geeky related. I mentioned this before. We turned an old radio into a Bluetooth speaker, and now I use my CyanogenMod tablet as my sort of music system. So I guess it is Linux related in a way, and I have a Linux powered hi-fi.
But you can only do that. One of the factors in lowering the barriers to you doing that is the fact that it's on Linux.
Yes. Well, the speaker isn't, the radio isn't, but obviously the tablet.
Yeah. If you'd had to monkey around with Windows APIs or whatever to do things, then I guess you maybe wouldn't have got around to it, or you'd have had to buy a license for £10,000.
Indeed.
Ben's, January the 27th, Grim Fandango released on Steam. Means nothing to me, that. Anybody?
It's a famous game. Yeah.
Do the young people play it?
Actually, it's an old game, but it's a good game. I've never played it, but it's a highly rated game.
Yeah.
Steam would be another one. I mean, the fact that that happened, it was reality. It wasn't a dream that we had. You know, Valve has launched Steam PCs with its partners and its own little console, and people continue to port their games. And it's Virtual Fighter or Street Fighter?
Well, when I was looking for news for the podcast, one of the things that popped up is that there's now 1,700 games for Linux on Steam.
Yeah.
I didn't actually check that was accurate, but someone claims that.
So if this keeps on growing at the same rate, in 2 years' time, all the games will be for Linux.
Yeah.
All the new games, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's slightly disappointing that things like Fallout 4 weren't released, but yeah, Linux has become this viable games platform. It's amazing.
Super tux, eh? So Kevin O'Brien says, I use my Kubuntu installation as my routine daily computer all year with no problems. That may sound, as a highlight of 2015, that sounds quite mundane until you realise what computers are. They are just mundane things that allow you to do other stuff.
Well, I think,
that is the ultimate victory, really.
Yeah. Actually being able to use Linux as your daily driver, you know, we all went through... You know, we were all using different operating systems. You had an Amiga, Graham, and, you know, when you could actually move to Linux as full time, and
we all had
a bit of time probably with Windows and never liked it for obvious reasons, when you can just run Linux full time like I did in 98, that's great.
Genuinely, one of mine was going to be how great KDE has been, which is quite... No, but I mean, there are lots of people who don't agree this year. They've had all kinds of stability issues with the window manager and the way that the compositing works and the stability. And I have had a few of those issues, but in general, I just think this has been the year that KDE 5 has kind of been released, even though, like Firefox releases, there's no huge kind of fanfare. It just keeps going from strength to strength. The latest release, just from very last week, 5.5, is brilliant. It's brilliant.
So are most release, most distros on KDE 5 now?
I think they are. In fact, just this week, Arch has said it's going to drop support for 4. So I think, you know, Arch dropping support for 4 is the way that things are going to be in 2016.
It always seems a bit complicated with the KDE application.
I don't get that.
They should just release
together. They've got a marketing
problem.
They've got a marketing team. But, I mean, I know why. They don't want to lock development of the applications to the releases of the desktop. But they don't even call it the desktop.
Yeah.
Because there's the lot... I mean, maybe this isn't the place for the discussion, but they wanted other people to use the libraries, the frameworks. So on OS X or Windows, they wanted people to build applications compiled against a frameworks release. At the same time, they wanted the Plasma desktop on Linux, which is its own separate release, and then the application suite on top of that, which could also be released for OS X and be independent of the Plasma desktop.
Oh, okay. I see what they were getting.
So that's what they were trying, but it has made things very complicated for 90% of the use cases of KDE. Yeah.
People just want the new release with everything together and new features to shout about.
And they're missing, like Firefox, I mean, what, version 42 or 43? How many reviews have they missed out in however many publications? Because who knows what version of Firefox we're on?
Yeah.
Gary KB says, for me, the biggest Linux highlight of 2015 was the release of Windows 10. I don't know, what would my favourite Linux event be? I've probably got two. One was OggCamp. It's not really specific to 2015 because it happens every year, but this is the... So I went last year and ended up sitting behind our little stand for most of the weekend. But this year I've managed to get up and about and move around and see more talks. And it's fantastic, the interesting stuff that people are doing.
And the positivity at that conference in particular. Everybody's like feeling so supportive, you know. It's like being with friends with people you've never met.
It is like a support group.
Yeah.
The other one would be... again, not specifically Linux related because it could be running RISC OS or Windows, but the way that the Raspberry Pi Foundation asked school kids to design experiments to be taken into space with Major Tim Peake, who is not the first British astronaut.
He's the first publicly funded British astronaut.
But see, when did that ever matter?
Positivity.
Positivity.
Because that's a very good debate. What the marketing department have done for the ESA is actually seize the moment to try and promote astronomy and being an astronaut and science to kids. It's just a marketing point.
Who's the first privately funded?
Well, there wasn't a privately funded one. There was it a British-Canadian?
Yeah.
Well, when I was a lad watching Blue Peter, looking at Helen Sharman going into space, I didn't know who was funding her. I just saw that she was going into space and it was cool.
Space people, yeah.
Going into space. I don't care. You know, if the taxpayer's funding it or somebody else's. It matters not. It matters not. However, he's taking these kids' experiments into space and I don't really know what they are, but the fact that you're taking a multi-squillion pound project like the International Space Station and bringing it down to a level that, you know, school children can engage with is just utterly superb.
And the ISS runs Linux, apparently, as well.
Yeah, it does.
Pretty cool.
It got a virus at once, didn't it, when it was somebody, some laptop was running XP.
Yeah, someone took a USB stick up with a virus on it.
No, wait, really?
It was something like that.
Oh, man. Exactly. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Tom got an actual working installation of Gen 2.
somebody using Gen 2.
Somebody uses Gen 2. Good stuff. And Tom also says, this is a little late for the podcast, for me it will be getting my dad to ditch XP on his older Lenovo laptop in favour of Zubuntu 14.04.
Makes you wonder how many people are still running XP out there, but it's probably a lot.
It does make me a little bit sad that a lot of people I speak to, or their relatives or them, are ditching XP in favour of a new computer when their old computer did what they wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. Just put Lubuntu on there or something. And
it's like they don't need more powerful hardware for what they wanted to do.
Or just keep using XP, but don't spend any more money.
Well, you got the security holes to worry about then, but yeah.
Yeah.
Just for Michael. I mean, Lubuntu on there.
It's been a really good year. I think it's been the year that open source has kind of won. Everybody understands open source code. Code has been huge as well, especially here in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the curriculum.
Look,
so many people promoting code.
Yeah.
Companies, I mean, we'd maybe describe it as cynical, but big companies like HP doing their own coding sessions and going to schools and teaching children how to program. I don't think coding is for everyone, and nor should it be made to be some kind of magical juice to enlightenment, but it's great to this compared to how we were just a few years ago before those changes in the British curriculum that previously emphasized spreadsheets and presentations to have people actually properly looking at how computers work and how you can use them. It's just really good, really positive. In 20 years time, you know, these children will be sat here doing a podcast, hopefully with a lot more content and skill.
But will they be able to make their own cider?
Kids today.
We can leave in safe hands the next generation. We should find the next voice, the next generation.
So on that crashing upswell of joy and happiness with the faint jingle bells of a red-nosed reindeer.
Is Santa coming? Oh no, that's a few days off yet.
Well, we can light the fire and burn him in the chimney.
With all that going on, it's time to wrap up 2015 from us.
Yeah. Oh, there's one more thing.
Whoa!
Hey, well just done, good old day.
This is a Christmas present.
Yes, it's a little Christmas
little synthesizer in a box.
To everyone. This is the free and open source software animals quiz.
Oh. Free and animals quiz.
So it's all about animals in free and open source software.
Okay. Oh, we did a quiz a couple of years ago. You remember, it was like a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
But they were my questions, so nobody knew how to answer them.
Okay.
this is just a short quiz, just five questions, and they're all multiple choice to an extent.
Okay. Well, Andrew is the pub quiz expert.
I am.
So, shall we? You all give your answers, but I won't tell you who's right and wrong, and the listeners can guess for themselves.
Wow. Yeah. Then everyone's a winner.
Comments.
So the first question is I'm going to read out three commands. Two of them will output a animal to the screen. One of them won't. You have to tell me which is the one that won't output an animal to the screen. And as will become obvious, this will have to be on a Debian-based system.
Oh, good, because I was getting confused. Yeah.
So the first command is apt space moo, M-O-O. The second is aptitude dash VV, VV, V, moo. And the third is synaptic dash HJK, moo.
Is one of the answers all of them?
One of them won't.
Two will.
And I can actually tell you, there's actually a bug against the one that doesn't.
Oh man.
Well, I reckon synaptic's got to be the newest, so I'm saying that's the one that doesn't.
I'm pretty sure apt moo works. I'm pretty sure I've seen that somewhere.
So it's choosing the one that doesn't.
Choosing the one that doesn't. So yeah, with a teamwork there. Yeah.
The other are we going to answer as a team?
I
or
don't
separately?
Know. VVV.
Five
V's.
V.
That's a great game, and if you've not played it already, you probably should.
Is that where it took its name?
Oh, I don't know. What is it? Is it a Debian command?
Well, it sounds like it's some argument at the end of aptitude, was it?
Yeah, aptitude dash V.
Okay.
No, that was five.
Well, I'm going to say that is the one that doesn't produce the animal.
Okay.
Just
because. Have you said, Mike?
I agree with this, yeah.
I support this message.
I said apt moo doesn't moo, and then Graham said that this is...
No, I said synaptic's the one that doesn't. I'm just guessing.
Oh, doesn't. Oh, okay.
That's what Ben wants us to do.
Yeah, and he reckons the middle one doesn't, the aptitude command.
The one with all the Vs.
I reckon the one with all the Vs doesn't do it, yeah.
Okay, I shan't tell you what's right.
Everyone can try themselves.
Yeah.
On Christmas Day.
You had enough of the family. You can type in commands into your Debian.
What are you doing, son? Is this why you've got a Pi Zero?
Right, this is about a mascots that are animals.
Ooh.
And again, I'm going to read out three statements, one of which is false, and you have to guess the false one. The first one is the name Python comes from Guido van Rossum liking Monty Python. The second is, there was a vote to determine the Linux logo, and Tux lost, so he is the mascot, not the logo. The third is that the gnome logo is a four-toed left foot, because in Norse mythology, the ancestor of the gnomes lost his left little toe in a battle with a troll.
Awesome.
If you wrote that, you should probably write fantasy fiction.
Two of those is right, one of those is wrong.
I'm going to say the one about Tux is wrong because...
Larry Ewing
did this penguin, and Linus was like, yeah, I got bitten by a penguin or something at a zoo in Finland.
What is the Linux trademark anyway?
Does anybody know what the Linux mascot used to be, or part of the logo before the penguin? Uh-huh. It was a seagull.
Really?
Really going back a bit here, yeah, but I can dig this out.
No such bird as a seagull. That's what the Yorkshire Wildlife Trust people would say if they were here. It's an Arctic term.
I'm going to go for that. I'm going to go for...
Yeah, the Guido van Rossum Python thing is true.
Yeah, I
concur with those two.
So you think the...
We really don't know.
The penguin's false.
Yeah. I believe I do know.
The penguin is a lie.
I'm confident.
Okay, so the third question in our animals quiz is in which release of the Linux kernel source code did the word penguin appear the most times? Oh! And I want this, so a major and minor. So
is this multiple choice?
3.10, 1.4, 2.8, so to one decimal place.
I've forgotten the difference between 2.6 and 2.7. Can you remember the penguin
count? I don't
think
it was. Was there a 2.7? Because it went to 3.0 then.
Odd numbers were unstable.
Yeah. So I think 2.6 was the last stable too.
But my point is, I really haven't kept on top of the number of penguins.
This is silly.
Right, which release? I'm going to say just because the Linux kernel source code grows and grows and grows with billions of drivers and file systems and everything. So what's the current version?
The most recent one.
4.10.
No, because they've got more professional, didn't they? Got paid to do it. So surely they'd remove any references to penguins.
I'm sure.
Except for the early releases, where they were kind of gung-ho about it and didn't care.
And every so variable like, name was Penguin. Penguin 1.
But then it was Seagull 1.
No. I'm still going to go for the latest. I'm going to go for 4. Whatever it is, 4.10.
10.
Yeah.
Version 10. Then it's
version 10.
Well, I'm going to go for 2, or pre-2. Can I say that? Because this is an impossible question to answer.
Okay, so you're going to go for pre-2.0. I'm just going for
version 10. Linux,
which doesn't exist, and I'll go for
care.
Version 4.10, so or whatever it is.
Okay, so again, I shan't tell you the answer. You'll have to guess yourself.
I'm right.
Sticking on penguins for another question. Oh. Which of these is not a species of penguin?
It's not Linux.
Oh, come on, Andrew should know this.
This has nothing to do with Linux, this question.
Disraeli.
Is it the fairy penguin, the chinstrap penguin, or the greybeard penguin?
I like that.
Surely the fairy question's a trick question.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
There's definitely a chinstrap penguin.
Yeah. Greybeard sounds pretty good to me.
Neckbeard penguin.
But fairies too obviously not.
Yeah. So I believe in fairy penguins.
Yeah. So it's got to be the greybeard.
What do you reckon?
I have no idea. I'll just roll the dice if I had a dice. But I don't. So.
Okay, our final question. I'm going to struggle to pronounce all this with some cider in me. Richard Stallman founded the GNU project to create a free operating system loosely based on Unix. The mascot for this project is the GNU, or wildebeest. This is more appropriate than it first appears. The Latin name for the genus of wildebeest, this is a bit I'm going to struggle to pronounce, Conochantes, perhaps, could also be applied to Richard Stallman. Does it mean one who rigidly sticks to their principles, one with a beard and flowing hair, or one who regularly travels far from home?
Beard and hair. Beard and hair.
Does it look Greek or Latin, or is that Conochantes?
It's con's kind of weird, isn't it?
Spanish. They didn't invent animals, so they don't get to name them.
They just cook them very nicely.
They throw them off church towers.
I'm going to go for the beard and long hair, because the original GNU has this beard and long hair. Why would they do that?
Yeah, the Latin name they didn't know. They didn't know. Come from the mascot of GNU.
Oh, okay. Right, yeah. Okay.
I'm going to go for travelling far from home.
I'm going to go with Andrew because I know he's a linguist.
And that's the end of our Christmas quiz.
Hooray! Merry Christmas, everybody. Have another mince pie.
Right, so that's the end of the podcast.
Yep.
I don't think we could probably speak any more words.
No. Just got more cider to drink. So. Yep, have a good Christmas, everybody. And thanks for listening all year. And here's to another year next year, whenever we return, sometime in January. Older and wiser.
And wiser.
Yes. And then destroying brain cells. So.
Hooray! Right then. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.